Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Well, that was a week. What it might portend for this economy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Friday today, the 8th day of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. A week indeed it was, with political implications that are, as we speak, still TBD, but with implications for this economy that you can kind of see the outlines of, even now. Here to make sense of it all are Kate Davidson. She is from the Wall Street Journal. Neela Richardson is the chief economist at ADP. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
So, Neela, let me start with a quick pass at this morning's jobs numbers, because it is Jobs Day Friday at the end of this kind of amazing week. We lost 140,000 jobs last month. My question to you is more of a statement, actually, and it goes like this. Uh-oh.
Yes, uh-oh, indeed. But it's not totally unexpected. We knew that the COVID cases were rising, and they were rising through December. And with that rise, states and municipalities have had to roll back or tighten restrictions on social gathering. That has a direct effect on the job market. So this trend of slowing momentum in jobs recovered each month as COVID cases rise continued in December. The hope is that when we have a population that is inoculated, maybe later this year, a second half of the year, we'll see those job gains come back. In the meantime, it's still going to be a pretty rough winter for those people who are out of work.
You know, so Kate, I was texting with a friend of mine this morning who works in finance, and he said, you know, I think by fall or winter of this year, which is to say 2021, we're going to be rolling right along. And I texted him back and I said, look, man, we are as far from winter this coming year as we are from the beginning of this thing. Think about all the damage that can that is still yet to come in this economy. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what, you know, Democratic policymakers and economists are warning about. And when you hear folks say it's important to have another big economic relief package, for example, which is something we've been hearing a lot about, even though we just had this big $900 billion one, you know, economists say it's important to try to get back to where we were before March as quickly as possible. In other words, the longer this is drawn out, the harder it is to come back, the deeper the hole, the harder it is to get out of it. It would be amazing if vaccines were rolled out quickly, which maybe in early December we were all so excited and we thought they would be, and now we're seeing, gee, it's not so easy, and people are maybe a little more pessimistic. So that just means it's going to take longer for people to be back in full force at restaurants or in movie theaters or on cruise ships or airplanes, it might feel like a long time before we're at that place.
So, Neela, let me ask you now about the news of Tuesday. The Democrats win Georgia. They now control the Senate. And there had been much speculation that they were going to be able to do something more in relief, maybe even those $2,000 checks that President Trump and others had been calling for. And then Joe Manchin, a Democrat of West Virginia, came out today and said, I'm not sure I'm on board for $2,000. And everybody kind of realized that it's a much thinner majority than maybe the actual numbers would imply.
Right. I think on this front, I'd make two points. First of all, I firmly believe that the economy is going to lead politics on this issue. If we continue to see job losses like we saw in December, there may not be a lot of wiggle room of how the government responds if they want to make sure that the economy can pull through this. Secondly, I think what it also indicates is, yes, there may be some dissension even along party lines. And so what it means is that big reforms, which typically occur when there's a single party leadership, might be delayed even further in this presidency because it's COVID right now that's taking charge. It's COVID that has a seat at the table. And so that's going to have to play out before we can get to those bigger reforms that I'm sure Biden would like to tackle in his term.
That's a really good line. The economy is going to lead policy. Speaking of economic policy, Kate, President-elect Biden came out in a statement today or in a speech to reporters talking about a bunch of economic stuff. He said, we should be investing in deficit spending, which is a remarkable thing for a politician to say out loud.
It's a huge reversal or shift, if you will, from when President Obama came in during the last financial crisis. Democrats were leaning into this idea that Republicans were pushing then, and I think continue to push that we need to be worried about deficits, right? I mean, we obviously want to support the economy and support people and households, but we can't go too far. And I think that there's been a big shift among economists and economic thinking on this in the 10 or 12 years since then. And that's, look at interest rates. They are so low right now. And Biden made this point that when interest rates are historically low and the Federal Reserve, you know, they've got rates as low as they can go or as low as they're willing to go. They said they aren't going to do negative rates. They could do more bond buying, but there's not a lot they can do. Then you should be spending more, even if that is deficit spending. And that's the argument that we heard the president-elect make today. And it's interesting because we know that his economic team, the advisors he's been turning to for advice, last year they were making that same argument. They're saying, look, the cost to finance this debt is so low, it makes sense to invest now because those investments will pay off over the long term if they boost growth.
Right. All right, I'm going to try to squeeze this last one in, and I'm going to try to get both of you here in about 30 seconds apiece, if you could. You can't leave this segment today without the politics of this economy coming up. And we talk a lot about uncertainty in this economy and what that has meant the last 4 years. I wonder, Neela, what you think about instability in the politics of this economy, because that seems to me to be where we are.
I think the biggest danger as we look at the economic fragility that we're grappling with in the winter months is that we take our eye off the ball of the economy and the people who've been hit hardest in this economy. It's easy to give way to the politics of the moment, but there are still about 10 million Americans who were working in February who are not working now. And we have rental moratoriums that actually end in January. And so the danger is that we give way to the politics and we stop thinking about the economy. So my urgency on this Friday is to remember it's about the economy right now and the health infrastructure that is necessary to keep the economic recovery going.
Kate, quickly, uncertainty versus instability.
Well, I think so much is going to depend on what happens after January 20th and whether you still have President Trump out there sort of riling up his base and how the Congress and how Republicans interact with the incoming administration, the incoming president. And we have reason to think things might go okay. Mitch McConnell has a longstanding relationship with Joe Biden. They've worked together for many, many years. But to Neela's point earlier, I think that what happens with the economy is going to be driving these discussions. Hopefully, hopefully if things get worse or things stay as they are, they'll come together. They'll overcome these issues and get something done if the economy needs it.
Kate Davidson at the Wall Street Journal, Neela Richardson. She's a chief economist at ADP. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
Thank you, Kai.
Have a nice weekend, everybody. Wall Street on this Friday at the end of a week that is going to be in the history books. Insurrection? What insurrection? Which I can't believe I just had to say. Details, numbers, you know the drill. As we pour over today's jobs report for the deeper meaning, as we are wont to do around here, it is good to remember this is a really different kind of recession. People are losing jobs temporarily. Job losses that might become permanent or might not. Whole big chunks of this economy are basically frozen in amber. And good as it is, the jobs report has a hard time accounting for all of that. But there is one number that's worth keeping in mind, even if it, too, doesn't tell the whole story. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has this story on long-term unemployment.
Nearly 4 million Americans have been unemployed for 6 months or more, according to the latest data. Dean Baker is a senior economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research.
This is obviously a story, people losing their job at the beginning of the crisis in March and April and not getting it back.
They make up a growing share of the unemployed, reaching 37% last month.
After people have been unemployed for more than 6 months, they find it much harder to get a job. And if they do get a job, their labor market prospects could be permanently worsened.
And the long-term unemployment numbers only include people who are actively looking for work.
There is this group that's feeling discouraged and who say that they're worried they may not find a job at all and feel like giving up.
Julia Pollack is chief economist with job site ZipRecruiter. She says right now there aren't many jobs to look for in some of the hardest hit sectors like retail and hospitality. Those industries are dominated by younger workers, people of color, and by women. Their labor force participation has fallen to levels not seen since the 80s. Emily Martin is a vice president at the National Women's Law Center.
We are really seeing a risk that women and families are not only being hard hit now, but really may be taking a long time to recover.
With disruptions to school and daycare, many moms have to stay home with the kids. More than 2 million women have left the labor force, potentially setting back their careers beyond the current crisis. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
One more thing on the actual jobs data. Adhering to the policy of this program that if we stop talking about this stuff, we're going to stop talking about it. White unemployment, 6% last month. Black unemployment, 9.9%. The virus, as I believe I've said a time or two on this show, and as Neela said about 3 minutes ago, is in charge of this economy right now. So who gets the vaccine for it and when is going to have a lot to do with how this economy goes. Among the slices of this economy that lost the most jobs last month, restaurants and travel and leisure. So it's of note that in Washington, D.C. next month, restaurant workers move up in the vaccine line. Marketplace's Jasmine Garst has that one.
Allison Lane bartends at several different places in Washington, D.C. She says even with the pandemic raging, patrons waiting for food and drink
decided that it was okay to take off your mask if you're sitting down at a table. It's like, okay, so the virus stops if you're sitting down.
Which puts servers like her at risk many times a day. She says vaccinating restaurant workers.
It definitely is an acknowledgement that restaurant workers are important and we are often exposed to disease without any health insurance.
And vaccines won't just protect the health of workers, they could be key to rebuilding the health of the restaurant industry. More than 100,000 restaurants have closed temporarily or for good since the pandemic began. Hundreds of thousands of restaurant workers have lost their jobs, and millions of people have stopped eating out. William Wheaton is an economist at MIT. He says,
without a restaurant industry, it is really hard for a city to survive. That's you know, half the reason people live in cities.
Sekou Sibi heads up Restaurant Opportunity Centers United, an advocacy group. He says the health of people handling our food is critical to combating the pandemic.
We have always considered restaurant workers, you know, healthcare as a public health issue. So the DC ordinance is something that is a very exciting news for us.
Sibi says he hopes other cities and states will follow DC's lead. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Coming up.
It's turned from one need to another need, and so I don't think bartering will ever go out.
Getting by in this pandemic economy. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 56 today, a 10th percent, 31,097. The Nasdaq added 134 points, 1%, 13,201. S&P 500 found 20 points, about a half percent, 38.24. For the 5 days gone by, and remember, we talked about disconnects on this program yesterday. The Dow up 1.6%. The Nasdaq ascended 2.4%. The S&P 500 rose 1.8%. Pfizer says its COVID vaccine appears to be effective against new variants of the virus. Not peer-reviewed, though. Pfizer up 0.2%. German partner BioNTech or BioNTech. The CEO says you can say it either way. Backed on more than 7%, you're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Numbers and data are fine, right? They give us a way to figure out some of the big forces at work in this economy. But behind all those statistics are business owners and bosses in unprecedented economic conditions making decisions about hiring and firing. So from our bureau in Austin, Texas, Marketplace's Andy Euler talked with some of those people.
Way back when, about a year and a half ago, Christoph Irwin was starting to expand his sustainable home design and engineering business, Positive Energy.
We actually brought on a lot of new staff in late 2019, early 2020, and then boom.
Probably don't need to tell you what the boom was. He kept his 18 full-time employees, but says now's not the time to hire more. There's just too much uncertainty. He says as a business,
we are treading water, and as people, we're exhausted.
Like many other small business owners, Lizelle Villapando can relate. She runs a boutique in Austin called Parts and Labor, and she's burned out.
If I could turn like three of my part-timers into full-timers, then I would feel comfortable taking 2 days a week off.
But she's not selling enough stuff to hire anybody.
The cost of having like five full-timers and the cash flow that I'm seeing now is scary.
Cash flow is why Shelley Meyer is running her several Austin gift shops with only about half of the people she had on before the pandemic.
There's less work. There's less work and less customers. So when we have more customers, we'll have more shifts. We'll need more merch. We'll have to bring in more people to process that merch. So we just have to wait until it happens.
She normally employs three people to run a warehouse full of inventory, but there's not a lot of product coming through the store, so right now there's no need for those workers. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
There have been, as you know, some questions about how the vaccine rollout's been going the past couple of weeks. Some organizational questions, who's in charge of what, who goes first, and some logistical questions, freezers and multiple doses. You've heard those issues. Those challenges were always going to look a little bit different in rural America. And that is where Dr. Scott Anzalone, one of the 10 people we've been following in our series about the American labor force called The United States of Work, is a family physician. He's got a small practice in Logan, Ohio. He is also the president of the local school board. Scott, it's good to talk to you again.
Oh, nice to talk to you again.
First of all, as you step out the front door of your clinic there and you walk down the streets of Logan, Ohio, what's it like right now?
It's kind of gloomy, gray Ohio. About temperature's about 35 degrees.
which matches the mood in a lot of ways.
Yes, it does.
As you go about your duties as number one, a small town doctor, and number two, the president of the local school district, how are things?
Oh, things have been busy here since Thanksgiving. COVID has made us all active in each of our jobs, trying to keep our kids educated and keeping our offices going. It's been a busy time.
Well, let's take them one by one. You as entrepreneur and a medical practitioner, are you like seeing patients in your clinic? Are you able to vaccinate those? Do you get the vaccines? I mean, give me the rundown.
Yeah, so I've been seeing patients face-to-face since this all began. I've never not seen patients,
oh, wow.
So I'm not a big telehealth proponent. As for the vaccine, my staff and myself, we just got vaccinated on Monday. The hospital staff, emergency room staff, and they were first line, obviously. But we just now got the vaccines about 2 weeks ago here in Hawking County.
And this is an illustration of the logistics of this vaccine, right? Because you are at the end of the supply chain. You're in a small town. You probably don't have those nuclear-powered freezers you need for these vaccines, right?
No, we didn't. Actually, our local critical access hospital had the funds to buy one of those for the Pfizer vaccine, but they were backordered.
Huh.
So we weren't in line to get the Pfizer vaccine, but we do have the Moderna. And the problem we're running into is logistics here locally is we're only getting our county is only getting 100 doses a week. I'm looking at trying to get my office signed up so we can receive them and give them in our office. So it'll take some of the burden off their health department.
Yeah.
Our next big push right now is to get our teachers and all of our school staff vaccinated. But again, we've got about 450 teachers and faculty and staff in our building. If we're only getting 100 doses a week.
Yeah.
That's going to take some time.
It's not going to do it. Well, thank you for the segue to your side gig, your side hustle, as it were, as the president of the local school board. Are you in session in person? Are you out of school? What's going on?
So our school district, we've been able to keep our kids in class up until Thanksgiving. Right before Thanksgiving, the week before Thanksgiving, things kind of hit the fan here locally. We got a spike in cases and it went virtual. That, you know, was logistically difficult because we have a lot of areas here that don't have good internet access. But we were able to pull it off. Our attendance rate, we kept it up. But the grades were starting to slide. Starting next Monday, we'll be going back full time.
Wow. I remember last time we talked, which was a number of months ago, you were putting Wi-Fi hotspots on school buses and driving them around. Did that work out?
Yeah, so we were able to put some hotspots on buses and move them out into the county. We also beefed up our internet abilities at each of our elementary schools so that parents could actually come to the parking lots as well and would have free access.
So let's talk about the future here for a second, because early on in our talks, I asked you about what's next for you as you start thinking about maybe next steps in your life and retiring and all that. And we had talked about trying to find a partner for your practice. Have you found one yet?
Well, fingers crossed. I've actually got a resident who's finishing up her residency in June this next year, the summer, who's coming to do a 1 week rotation with me starting Monday, kind of a working interview. So we can interview each other basically. So she's checking me out. So I've got my fingers crossed that God's sending me someone here that can help us out in our community. So
that's funny.
We'll wait and see.
It's got to be a remarkably personal thing, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's tough to find someone who's willing to come into a rural community. And especially now with the political environment we're in, we have no idea really what medicine's going to look like in next year, 2 years, 5 years from now.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping she'll see the pluses of a rural, small-town private practice.
Well, fingers crossed for you, Scott. Fingers crossed. Dr. Scott Anzalone, he's in Logan, Ohio, runs Stagecoach Family Medicine. It's his private practice there. Scott, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we got national jobs numbers today. As you know, state reports aren't going to be out for another couple of weeks, but it's a safe bet that New Jersey, Nevada, and Hawaii, which all had unemployment rates above 10% in November, are going to stay right in the top three. Veronica Kuhn, she's a hairdresser in Henderson, Nevada, found a way to help her community, a Facebook bartering group, people trading for stuff that they need. When she started it back in March, a lot of people were looking for hand sanitizer and disinfecting wipes and, yes, toilet paper as well. We checked back in with her just before Christmas to see how things might have changed.
So in the barter group now, we have a lot of people looking for items for kids and family members and food. Most of November, we had toilet paper and paper towel shortage, and the disinfecting wipes and stuff were, you know, gone. And people were still posting, where can I find them? People were posting, you know, what stores had them at what times. And now in December, it's more toys and stuff like that for their kids, and they're on their last paycheck or whatever. So this one lady was looking for a game for her son. She had already gotten assistance for her younger kids, but the 17-year-olds are a little bit old for the charities out here that help with toys. So she had like brand new shoes and stuff like that that she was willing to barter for this game for her son. It's turned from one need to another need. And so I don't think bartering will ever go out, just because there's always going to be a need for people and people not having the cash to get their needs. And I'm super glad to see other people pick up on it in our community and in other states and stuff like that, because there's barter groups all over the country now. And I just think it's something that's necessary, even not in a pandemic, it's necessary.
That's Veronica Kuhn in Henderson, Nevada. That's outside of Las Vegas. You can tell us about your economy. You can do it at marketplace.org/myeconomy. This final note on the way out today, at the end of this long and sad week, more of an observation, really. Our democracy works fundamentally because we believe in it together, because of a shared sense of common purpose and belief in facts. And right now, based on this week, that's kind of up in the air. But this economy works pretty much the same way. We buy and sell on faith and credit. We borrow and spend because we believe the deal is worth it. And there are, as we talk about a lot on this program, real injustices in our politics and our economy and in the politics of this economy. But just because I said on this program on Wednesday that I was wrong the night President Trump was elected to think things were going to be all right, I do believe we can get there. All right, we got to go. As I said, at the end of a long week that is going to be in the history books. Next week will too. BJ Lederman does our music. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you Monday, everybody. This is APM.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.